Hey, dude, guess what tonight?
What?
Pool party, my house, 8 o'clock.
Get it on, everybody. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. This is the Pool Party Radio Podcast. I'm Parker.
I'm Jason.
And this week we're joined by special guest Jeremy Morrison. Hello, Jeremy.
Hello, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for being on our show.
Mm-hmm.
You are for sure going to be branded a sexist now that you are on our show.
Yes.
It's the only way. Yeah.
It's the only way to be branded a sexist.
Well, anything helps, you know.
Any way you can get your star on that sexist hall of fame. Jeremy is a movie maker. He works with Adam Rifkin, who I recently read a whole lot about because I read the Ron Jeremy autobiography, and Adam Rifkin is in there a lot. And so that made me feel closer to Adam Rifkin, despite the fact that I don't know him at all.
That's a hell of a way to feel closer through Ron Jeremy. Unfortunately, I have to run into Ron Jeremy all the time because of Adam Rifkin. So I guess you're closer to me now, too, Parker.
Excellent. That's how I feel closer to the naked broads that he has sex with, is vicariously through him. So that's also how I feel through the regular movie makers. That's what Ron Jeremy does. He brings you closer to the people he has made movies with and or had sex with.
But not to open any wounds, Jeremy, you said unfortunately, so I'm taking it's not a treat whenever Ron comes around, or?
Well, I guess I shouldn't have said that, because he's a super sweet, nice guy, but every time I meet him, or every time I see him, rather, I'm meeting him for the first time in his eyes, so I have to endure the same jokes over and over again. And like, oh, hey, what's your name? Jeremy. Oh, that's a great name. Thanks, Ron. Thanks for that again. I need more of that in my life, you know?
That seems, I would have guessed that he'd be like that. That's a lot of what his book is like.
Exactly. When you read his book, it's literally like having a conversation with him. And I had read the book, you know, many years ago before I started working with Rifkin. And so the first time I met him, he was telling me these stories, and I was like, yeah, right on. I read that in your book. And, oh, okay. And then he told me another story. Yeah, that's in your book. And just story after story for literally 3 hours. The first time I ever met him, I was at a party with Tiffany Shepis, and he rolled through, and Shepis ditched me with him. I was like, you fucking ass.
That's got to be the worst ever ditch. Like, man, you're hanging out with super tromette Tiffany Shepis, and she leaves you alone with Ron Jeremy.
That's,
there could be no worse, like, high to low at a party.
Well, I don't know. I was just going to say, I don't think that, you know, it's much of a high hanging out with super tromette Tiffany Shepis these days, because she treats me very much like her little brother. And so she's either throwing salt in my eyes or slapping me across the chest with the Tiffany Shepis branded chop. It's hell being around her, but I love it. I guess I am kind of a masochist these days.
Good God. Like, I'm someone's little brother, but I've never had salt thrown in my eyes or slapped across the chest.
It's fun because she'll run up to you and she'll go, "You've just been assaulted," and she'll throw salt in your eyes.
Oh, that's kind of funny. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Oddly enough, that's what Ric Flair's little brother has to deal with on a daily basis. You've been working on Chillerama with Adam Rifkin. What's entailing with that? Or, I didn't use any of those words correctly, but
I was just going to say,
what does that entail?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That's why Jason's here. He's got the master's degree in English, and I stumble around common words.
I stumble around the, so it's okay. Chillerama is great. It's a new anthology from Adam Rifkin, Adam Green, Joe Lynch, and Tim Sullivan. I had the fortune of working on Adam Green's project. His segment's entitled Diary of Anne Frankenstein. And you can just imagine what's going on there. Hitler, World War II, Kane Hodder as Meshuggah. Enough said, right?
That sounds pretty sweet.
It's fucking damn sweet.
Yeah, we were just talking last week about how much we love Frankensteins. So
it's true.
I know, and I was like, God, I'm going to bust out some Meshuggah on them, and they're going to be fucking wetting themselves. But I didn't hear any squirting, so... Tim Sullivan's segment is called Tim Sullivan's segment is called I Was a Teenage Werebear.
That sounds adorable.
It's right on. I didn't read the script for that one, and I didn't work on it, so I don't know much about it other than Tim Sullivan directed it. And if you've seen 2001 Maniacs, Field of Screams, I'm sure you know what's in tail. Joe Lynch directed Zombie Movie, which is kind of the wraparound segments, and it's the segments that you know take each film in and out of their breaks, and then the end of the movie is his movie, which the segments then that take place at a drive-in theater, somehow the popcorn at the drive-in theater becomes contaminated, and so people start turning into zombies. And I don't think I'm allowed to say what kind of zombies they are, but they don't eat you. They do other horribly awesome Ron Jeremy-esque things to you.
That's intriguing.
Yes. And then of course, Rifkin directed the segment Wadzilla, about a giant sperm that attacks the city of New York.
I like that. That sounds good.
And I worked on Rifkin's as well. So, they're fun. They're not as much horror as they are comedy, in my opinion, which is a good thing because these three, you know, or four, sorry. I always discount Tim Sullivan. I don't mean to do that on purpose. Or do I? Fuck. I'm going to get raped.
We're leaving all of this in, by the way.
Excellent. I don't care. My career's over. The four directors are very much comedy directors, though. You know, Adam Green and Joe Lynch obviously know horror. Rifkin's done horror movies in the past. Tim Sullivan does horror. But really, the four of them are just funny, you know, dudes. So I feel that the film is a lot funnier than what the average horror film is going to expect, and that's actually kind of a good thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. I mean, I like my horror having a little comedy in there. I like that Freddy. So anything that's similar to, you know, Freddy's knack for making fun of people while they die is fine with me.
Yeah, definitely. Shit, so yeah, I guess that's it was with Wadzilla, with Chillerama. Fuck, who's got the master's degree in English now?
That's everything for Chillerama, apparently.
There yeah, well, they thank you, Jason Frisbee. They just premiered Chillerama at San Diego Comic-Con last weekend.
Oh, no kidding.
Friday night, and apparently it was a huge success. Or at least that's what I'm reading on the tweets that Adam Rifkin is retweeting. He likes good reviews.
I would imagine. I wouldn't. I think that Andrew Breitbart's the only person who likes bad reviews of their stuff.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. so yeah, apparently it did well, and I believe there was a Dread Central post not too long ago that Image picked it up for DVD and Blu-ray distribution. So look for it soon, kids.
Sweet. And then also you have, well, I think you changed the name of it. You're working on a new Facebook, Twitter stream for reviewing movies and whatnot. What is it called now?
It's called Acid Pop Cult, which is very confusing, and I'm not going to tell you why just yet. But we did it ass backwards, right? We started the Facebook and the Twitter page and then we decided that we were going to turn it into a podcast as well. Well, it turns out Cynical Cinema, as it was called before, all the domains for Cynical Cinema were taken, and me and my friends, being novices in the podcast industry, we're not professionals like you guys. That wasn't a diss. That wasn't a diss. Oh my God. I'm sorry about that. we should have Googled, you know, Cynical Cinema to see if somebody else was doing it. And unfortunately, 100 other people are doing it. So we changed it to Acid Pop Cult, and that's not taken on any of the blogospheres. So we're going to run with it.
So you just had to find three words that were not taken by other people already. That's basically what the internet is now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I took my cue from Pool Party Radio and Junk
Food.
Exactly.
I was going to say, you already sound like a professional.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need three words to really get your podcast up and going.
That's what I hear from Parker when he's talking to me late night on the Twitter. what we're going to specialize in, hopefully, is pretty much ripping you guys off, talking about all things pop culture and all things movie related. So.
Excellent. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Let us know when it's up. To it. Yeah, we'll put links up and have a big celebration.
We'll do. And we'll, you know, be more than happy to beg you guys to come on and give us some notoriety.
Excellent. I would love to be a guest on a podcast. This hosting stuff, it's for the birds. For the birds.
Well, this guesting stuff's not, you know, it's stressful, man. I've had diarrhea all day just thinking about it.
I can hear some glass clinking around in a highball glass. What are you drinking tonight?
Oh yeah, I'm classy, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean for the ice cubes to be all in your ear holes.
Oh, I thought that was Jeremy trying to cool his nerves. No, he's cool as a cucumber. You're the one who's drinking.
Yeah, I'm the one who needs to cool
my
nerves.
This is how much you like this hosting thing, right?
Yeah, I've got some Patron with green Gatorade because
holy cow, Patron!
I'm very classy.
Classy fellow. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it gets canceled out because of the green Gatorade.
So. This is kind of a tangent, but I watched my first episode of Entourage over the weekend, and good Lord, they promote the hell out of Avion tequila. It's like every scene is them just talking about Avion tequila. It's pretty terrible show. Anyway.
Yeah, all this product placement in these TV shows lately. I was trying to watch Breaking Bad the other day, and it's all about meth, how I should buy meth. Ridiculous. I would like to mention, the last week I accused Jason of lying about, well, I didn't so much accuse him of lying, but I was skeptical. I thought maybe he was too scared to go out to the haunted place that I sent him to find out if ghosts were real. And he said it was now a parking lot. And so I said that he could be lying because there's no way that anybody could prove it, that he actually went there because I don't live in North Carolina. But we got a comment on the blog, and Jason's girlfriend said that he did go and that it was a parking lot. So I'm sorry that I accused you, Jason.
No, you had every right to. And you probably still could because, you know, it was my girlfriend who did this. You don't know if I actually put her up to doing that just to calm you down. Of course, why would I be telling you about it? But then again, I'm just saying, you never know.
Yeah, that's the kind of guy you are. You force your girlfriends into lying for you. Under threat of violence.
We've been friends for years now, and you know me well, too.
But yeah, so I figure next on the show we should talk about the things we've learned this week, which is a tradition that we have. Would you like to start us off, Jason Frisbee?
Sure. I learned this week that I cannot trust to see Charlie Day or Jason Sudeikis in a movie, because they will not make it funny. And neither will Jason Bateman. I saw Horrible Bosses this weekend. It's one of the first films I've seen in theaters. Well, I saw it since probably last month. And have you guys seen this before?
I have not, no.
Jeremy? Yeah, neither have I, no.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. All three gents who are in it are usually, I think, hysterical. And they did not pull anything off. It was very bizarre. It was like kind of like watching a very slow-moving train wreck for about an hour and a half. And a whole lot of nothing going on there. So I guess I learned not to see Horrible Bosses ever again. But more than that, just from previous experiences, I can't really trust Jason Sudeikis or Charlie Day specifically in films. Jason Bateman, probably. Although I'm probably not going to see anything he does anymore either. What about you, Parker? What did you learn?
Well, I like that those three guys, you're just ruined on them forever. You can never trust them again.
I can never trust them again. Maybe on the small screen, but man, I've seen Jason Sudeikis, just those two guys specifically, who, again, I think are hilarious, but every time I see in a movie these days, I am always disappointed. So they have to redeem themselves incredibly in order to get my trust back. But it's just one person, you know. They can probably still do really well for themselves without my trust.
I'm assuming you're wrong. I assume that everybody hates them now.
Okay. Well, once this is actually broadcast.
Yeah, by the time this is broadcast, everybody will hate them. And at least one of them will be dead.
I'm never even going to see it. I'm mortified to see it now. I fuck those guys.
Well, I've already affected two people, and I'll affect all three of our listeners after this.
I learned that despite the fact that I've moved away from everybody I know, and I'm a hermit, I don't leave my house. Like, I leave my house once a month, and it's like a spectacle. Like, the way that if you were to take somebody who, like, lives in, to go back to this, Depression era Oklahoma during the Dust Bowl, and, like, put them in Times Square, the way they would, like, light up. That's the way I light up anytime I just leave the house in general. I'm like, oh, a 7-Eleven. This is amazing. But so I'm quite the hermit. But I've learned that I'm not hermit enough that I still can't be annoyed by humans. The other day I woke up at about 2 in the afternoon to knocking, like the most horrible knocking. Knocking, you know that your day is going to be ruined when somebody knocks on your door, not in like a polite, normal manner, you know, knock, knock, knock. But when somebody's knocking like their favorite song on your door and just won't stop. That's the kind of knock I got the other day. And, you know, I got up and I had to put the cat away and the dog away because if it was the landlord, we're not allowed to have those guys and all this crap. And, you know, I was up till 7 in the morning playing Warcraft. And, you know, so I was very grumpy to be awake. And then it was my wife's sister who needed a piece of tinfoil. That's all. I was woke up to knocking, like this kind of knocking. And, yeah, just for tinfoil. So I've learned that I'm not, you know, I'm not immune to being annoyed by human beings the way that I thought I was. How about you, Jeremy? What did you learn this week?
I actually have two things for you, if that's okay.
That is fine.
I figure, you know, I'm a guest. I don't know when I'm going to be back, so I got to get these in. First thing I learned was that a beautiful woman taught me that if you're ever told by a female that she just needs space or that she needs to work on herself, you need to run for the hills. As Iron Maiden would suggest. Was Maiden right?
Yeah, indeed it was.
Yes! My cool points just went up. The second thing I learned was that Back to the Future Part 3 is full of shit.
Oh, yes. Please tell us why.
Here's why. Okay, so in the beginning, spoiler alert for all you Back to the Future non-fans out there. In the beginning of the movie, or near the beginning of the movie, whenever they see Doc's tombstone, it says survived by his beloved Clara, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right on. So he's supposed to be shot on the 7th. Marty goes back, you know, 88 miles per hour, whatever. And they talk about the ravine being whatever her name is. Like, that's the chick's name. It's the ravine because she dies in the ravine. Doc Brown saves her from dying well before the 7th. That's when they fall in love. And my world was crushed. Because for some reason, Bob Zemeckis decided to fuck me on continuity in part 3. Like, you look at 1 and 2, and it's the perfect exercise and how to just keep a perfect continuity going. And then part 3, it's like, oh, fuck it. We're kind of out of ideas. What do you got, Bob Gale? I don't know, Bob Zemeckis. Let's just fuck everybody over. So Back to the Future Part 3 is full of shit, and I hate it now.
Yeah, well, I mean, the first one wasn't too big on continuity. Like, if I hung out with somebody in high school, and they, like, played a Chuck Berry song, and, like, they were, like, an important part of me meeting my husband and not getting raped by Biff, and then, like, 15 years later, I had a kid that looked exactly like that guy, I would probably flip the fuck out. And apparently everybody else thinks it's completely reasonable.
See, I think it's reasonable because I don't want to think that it's not reasonable because I love Back to the Future. So fuck you. Fuck you for putting it down.
That's understandable. Yeah, I think that's the dividing line on Back to the Future. Like, whether if you love it, then you'll forgive all the weird time travel stuff. But if you don't, then you're holding it up to, like, Stephen Hawking-esque scrutiny.
Well, I mean, come on. I mean, it's Back to the Future. Yeah, I take it you're a fan.
Well, I loved it when I was a little kid, and then I watched all of them one really, really boredom-filled day, like, 2 years ago. And I was like, nothing adds up here. This is not adding up at all.
So are you calling me a little kid?
No, is I'm just... No, that's not challenge? What I'm saying. I'm just saying that I'm more cynical than you are, I would think. I'm just an evil ghoul with no empathy who is chaotic evil, and I can't get into this fun-filled fantasy world the way that normal humans can.
Well, I give you that. I'm usually cynical, but not with Back to the Future, because I have a hard-on for Bob Zemeckis.
That's understandable.
Pre-Polar Bear Express.
Up next, because we've got sort of a movie motif going on here tonight, and in honor of Frisbee finally seeing Serenity over this past week, and I figured that we could do a rundown of the good, the bad, and the ugly, the way we occasionally do. This is a game, quote-unquote, where we just list the good, the bad, and the ugly of a certain topic, and this week, like I said, we have movie villains. Would you like to start us off, Mr. Frisbee, since you're the man of honor, since you've seen Serenity?
Sure thing, and since you keep bringing up Serenity, I do have to agree that the probably one of the best villains that I thought that you were going to bring up is the operative in the movie Serenity. He's just this unstoppable force, keeps going after the Firefly crew, or the crew of Serenity. But I'm actually trailing on a different theme with this. Well, I do agree he's a great villain. Honestly, I just thought that you'd be picking him, so I didn't pick him.
Yeah, spoiler alert. I did pick him, yes.
Okay, great. So I'll just go through my good then. And I did pick alternates, but my good is Hans Gruber from the original Die Hard. Just cold calculating mastermind, and really kind of sets the standard for a lot of villains in film. My alternate would have been Poison Ivy from Batman and Robin, just because I thought it looked great. Probably wasn't executed very well, but I thought it looked great.
That's a weird, weird choice to be to be a good villain.
Well, it's an alternate. It was just an afterthought.
Okay.
What was your good villain, Jeremy?
Actually, I'm probably going to catch some shit for this, but my villain has to be Horace Pinker from Shocker.
I
don't have a reason other than I love Shocker, and he's amazing. Horace Pinker is, like, when I have wet dreams, there are Horace Pinker involved. So that's my good.
That's understandable. I think he's a cool villain just because he murders people and then makes their rooms turn into blood afterwards, and I like that about a villain.
Yes, thank you.
So Horace Pinker the man, I agree wholeheartedly with, but Horace Pinker the electricity is where I draw the line.
No, we're talking, you know, pre zapping through electrical outlets and turning into lazy boys. But yeah, him the person before the shocking begins. Fucking dude, come on.
Yeah, he's a bad dude.
Right.
Yeah, my good, like I said, is the operative from Serenity. He is a very scary man, and he's very complex. He understands the horrific things he has to do to achieve utopia, and then understands that because he's done these horrific things, and because he's capable of these horrific things, he cannot live in that utopia. And I think that's astoundingly fantastic for a villain. Also, he uses a sword. That's cool. I like swords. Who's your bad example of a villain, Mr. Frisbee?
You might be seeing a theme here, but I picked Thomas Gabriel from Die Hard 4.0. I don't want to give away what the theme is to this, but I'm sure it'll catch on. This was a very underwhelming portrayal. of a hacker genius. And whenever there's a movie villain who is a hacking genius, it usually is a recipe for disaster because half the audience doesn't know what he's trying to do when he's at a computer, and the other half is finding it laughable because really he's just plucking away as fast as possible on a keyboard, and we're made to believe that he's trying to accomplish something more than just by doing those multiple keystrokes, like in nanoseconds. That and his YouTube-style grievances that he broadcast in the movie Die Hard 4 are just very silly and angsty-looking. He does kind of look like he's about to scream, "Leave Britney alone," something to that effect. My alternate, and you might see a theme with this one, is Mr. Freeze from Batman and Robin, because I thought it was a terrible look and terrible portrayal with a lot of goofy one-liners about freezing from Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought him up, because now I have an excuse to play the clip of somebody edited together all the puns about being cold from that movie. Now I get to play that during one of the breaks on this episode, so thank you for bringing
that up. Yeah, no problem.
Who's your bad villain, Jeremy?
I feel a little slighted because mine was Thomas Gabriel for all the reasons explained by Mr. Jason Frisbee. I almost said Freezebee.
That's a good
point. Stay cool, Morrison.
I should have went with it. But luckily, I have an alternate. Dickie Diamond from Going Overboard. Have you guys seen Going Overboard?
Is that the Goldie Hawn movie?
No. It's the Adam Sandler.
Oh yeah,
classic. The classic from 1980, whatever. Dickie Diamond is the cruise ship's stand-up comedian that keeps putting little Shecky Moskowitz, aka Adam Sandler, he keeps cock-blocking him from pursuing his dream as the cruise ship stand-up comedian. And he's just a horrible, horrible person for it, because as we all know, Adam Sandler, even though he's not funny and Going Overboard, he still isn't funny today. But, you know, he made a career out of not being funny. So he deserved his shot, in my opinion. And he got it. Spoiler alert. He gets it.
Well, you've ruined this entire movie for me that I was going to see. I've got it.
Yeah, there's no reason for me to see this movie now, this fine Adam Sandler film.
It just arrived today from Netflix. And
here's why you could still check it out. Little underground part played by Mr. Adam Rifkin. So check it out.
Oh, now I'll watch it. That sounds good.
Yeah, thank you. There you go.
I just realized, since you, Mr. Frisbee, said that there was a theme with yours, I realized that there's a theme with mine, and I didn't anticipate that happening. But my bad villain is Nero from the new Star Trek movie, because in most movies, I just saw Captain America, and there's a thing that movie kids like to call a MacGuffin, which is like sort of this stupid, nonsensical thing that gets the plot rolling in a movie. And in Captain America, it's this cosmic cube that Nazis need to destroy the world. And in Star Trek, the MacGuffin is the villain himself. Like, they're just like, hey, how do we get this plot going? How do we get, this time warp thing happening where we get to reboot Star Trek? And somebody's like, I know, we need a villain. And that's basically all he is. He has no characterization. He's not badass. There's no emotional conflict between him and our main characters. He's just there to keep the plot going.
Now, Nero was the Vulcan, right?
Yeah. He was,
and he was
the guy who used to be the Incredible Hulk.
Okay.
See, this is
for
this
a second.
This is how bad a villain he is that who knows who he even is? We all saw that movie. We don't know who that guy is. There was a villain in that movie?
Yeah, I think I see what you're saying. I'm trying to remember what it was exactly that he was doing. He came through on that Vulcan ship, and it created a paradox? Was that it?
Yeah.
I can't even recall exactly.
Actually, maybe he was a Romulan. I don't know. But yeah, he came through.
See, that's even worse. We can't even decide what species he was. Like,
yeah.
Vulcans were the antithesis of... Oh, no, you're right. Romulan. You're right, because Vulcans were what Mr. Spock was.
Yeah.
Screw, I didn't even know. Okay.
So yeah, terrible, terrible villain. Who is your ugly villain, Mr. Frisbee?
My ugly villain was actually, and you'll probably get the theme of this now, Colonel Stewart from Die Hard 2. the very beginning of the film, your introduction to Colonel Stewart is a slow camera pan in his hotel room. This is only about like 5 minutes in, 4 minutes in, probably shorter than that. And you recognize that there's a guy exercising in his room from panted breath, but he's performing karate in the nude. So you get this full-on back shot, not just like gratuitous butt shot or anything, but this totally naked guy giving air chops in the wind by himself in a hotel room. It's not a flattering way to introduce any sort of character. Maybe Buffalo Bill, but this was not one of those movies. He's supposed to be like this evil genius. And that's another thing I don't get, is that once the plot gets rolling, it's obvious that he has a plan, but he has like five steps ahead style planning for somebody like John McClane, who he does not expect to come in into play. So it's not very conceivable. Plus, again, your first introduction is him naked and practicing judo or karate, and it's very distracting and gross. My alternate was Bane from Batman and Robin, because it was just terrible. He was only used for a few seconds and it looked awful.
Yeah, and they completely ruined everything that made Bane Bane from the comic books.
Yeah, and this one, he was just a grunt who can toss a bat signal off a building. That's about it.
Yeah, and can get beat up by Batgirl.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Jeremy? Who is your ugliest villain?
My ugliest villain. I'm going to catch a lot of shit for this. Klon from A Ninfoy Barbarian in Dinosaur Hell.
I don't think I've seen that movie since I was a wee lad, so I don't recall this guy.
You, sir, are missing out. He's the... Apparently, he's the sole survivor in the... And the Tromaville nuclear fallout that has a gangle of minions who are dressed very unconvincingly as lizards. And Klon doesn't really talk except for when he sees the beautiful nymphoid. He's able to say, "Woman," like very pathetically. And he gets into a lot of fights and he's not a very, well, let's just put it this way. He sucks. He can't throw a punch. And you know, he's tossing this little nymphoid around and, you know, supposedly raping her. And all he's doing is drooling on her boobies. And there's no penetration. You can tell. It's just horrible.
Just a lot of fevered whispering of "woman."
Yeah.
I do remember that part, actually. At first, I wasn't sure if I remember who you're talking about, but that I do remember.
Yeah. And he just can't fight, and yet he's going up against this beautiful, hot stud of a man. And and this guy could obviously just beat the shit out of him and his little lizards that, you know, just sit there and look stupid. And... He sucks. Sorry. He just sucks. I love the movie, though. It's great. Check it out. From Troma, of course.
For my ugly, and rounding out my inadvertent theme of space operas, I have Boba Fett. Because he's built up to be this great bad guy, you know, people talk about him in the first movie, he shows up in the second movie and takes out the most badass hero in the entire saga. And then in the third movie, around 20 minutes in, somebody just accidentally knocks him into a Sarlacc pit and he's gone. And that's no way for the baddest ass guy in your entire franchise to die. The guy who the next three prequels are built around the fact that this guy's a badass because he becomes a clone that takes over the universe. And no, he just accidentally gets knocked into Sarlacc pits and dies. He's the weakest villain I think I've ever come across. And I hate him.
Yeah, and it wasn't like it did bridge between the second and third films, or I guess the fifth and sixth films. But, I mean, Han Solo being captured, they rescue him within those first 20 minutes of the sixth movie. And really, they just need him to pilot the Millennium Falcon, which Lando Calrissian was doing in the meantime. I mean, it's not like he captured Luke, is what I'm saying. I mean, it sucks that he captured Han, but
yeah,
it wasn't like the hero of the movies. It wasn't this game-changing sort of thing. Just kind of threw a wrench in the plans.
Yeah, like Han, he's badass and he's cool and stuff, but he's by no means necessary to win this war. He's just some dude. So, and that's Boba Fett's whole thing, is that he has to take out this space pirate that's, you know, you minorly inconvenienced the Rebel Alliance by taking this guy out.
And you blew up Jabba's entire house with all the innocent people who had nothing to do with it being blown to bits as well. Yeah, and plus Boba Fett falling into that pit, being eaten. I mean, he has jetpacks. Like, was there something wrong with the jetpacks, or did they come off? Or
they sparked a little bit as he was falling, so I think that they malfunctioned.
Yeah, still.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, when you're an intergalactic bounty hunter who's, like, super rich, you buy pieces of shit jetpacks, apparently. But,
that's
yeah.
That's last on your priorities. Like, oh, I'm never going to fall. Too far. I'll just wait to fix that gadget.
Yeah, so that's the good, the bad, and the ugly. Right now we have a Wisdom of Warcraft, which is something we've done a few times on the show. Haven't done it in a couple of weeks, so I think it's where I, like I said, play a lot of Warcraft, and sometimes people say really ridiculous things in general chat to thousands of people who are also playing Warcraft, and this thing comes from Illard. He says, anyone ever jacked in the shower? You get it all over your hand, and you think you got it all, but then you realize you didn't when you were washing off, and now you have little cum balls all over you.
Beautiful. It's like poetry.
Yeah, it's like a Maya Angelou poem. So, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with the lightning round.
Tonight's forecast. A freeze is coming. Allow me to break the ice. You are not sending me to the cooler. Freeze well. What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age! Stay cool, bird boy. Let's kick some ice.
Show some mercy.
I'm afraid that my condition has left me cold to your pleas of mercy. No! All right, everyone, chill. It's a cold town. Cool party. Can you be cold, Batman? Chill to perfection. Revenge is a dish best of cold. Winter has come at last. Freeze. Freeze. Ice. Freeze. Ice. Winter fiber. Frozen. Icy. Freeze. Winter ice. Ice. Freeze. Winter. Winter. Freeze. Cold. Frosty.
Welcome back to Pool Party. Up next, we've got the lightning round. It's the part of the show where we talk about news and stuff, and it is ironically named the lightning round because it's usually the longest part of the show.
And now, it's time for the lightning round.
The first thing we have is that Amy Winehouse has unexpectedly died. This has been a real cause for people to get mad at each other on Facebook, as, you know, everybody who's silly and obsessed with any celebrity whatsoever has been posting the stuff, oh, we miss you, you're in the 27 Club now with the Kurt Cobains and the Jimi Hendrix. And so you have all those dildos, and then you have all the dildos that are like, hey, can't you understand that Norway just got bombed? And, you know, they're just trying to make a fight. And so now everybody's fighting about this Amy Winehouse thing. But, yeah, it really makes me mad that people are so quick to just whoever is dead just be like, oh, my God, they were a genius. I didn't care about them 2 days ago, but, oh, they're a genius now. I would never listen to this person in my life. But now that they're dead, I'm going to go on Pandora and listen to them, which is exactly what's happening since Amy Winehouse's death. Her popularity on Pandora has gone up 100 times its original popularity. But, yeah, how do you guys feel about this? Are you guys saddened by Amy Winehouse's passing?
Honestly, and I know this has been the big joke for all the Amy Winehouse haters out there, but honestly, swear to, you know, whatever God you want to swear to, I thought she was dead already. So I mourned like a year ago. But it turns out she wasn't a corpse. She was just a crack whore in all the TMZ pictures. Like, I thought TMZ was just parading her corpse around. But I digress. No, I'm not sad, and I think it's just stupid. I mean, she's a fucking crackhead. Crackheads die, unfortunately. Yeah. Charlie Sheen's still around, but most of the crackheads die. So, you choose that lifestyle, whatever. Fuck drugs.
I agree with Jeremy. Fuck drugs for one, but for two, I already thought that she was dead. I'm pretty sure there was a report released about a year ago where she was, well, probably not legally dead, but she had OD'd, and I thought that was it. See, I'm the one who's too quick to judge here, because I think OD generally means that you're going to die anyway, but I forget that people can kick out of that. Yeah, and again, just to reiterate what Jeremy said, it's not really all that surprising. I know it's another thing that's commonly said, but her first single was one lyric. They told me to go to rehab, and I said no. So, yeah. You know, if that's not just forewarning, like, hey, this is going to be a mess, then, you know, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, when the only thing you're known for, you said that was her first single, but it's her only single. Like, when the only thing you're known for is people telling you to go to rehab and you saying no, and then you die of drugs, come on, you're just like a joke. You're like a Sophoclesian, ironic joke. Like, you lived your life as a joke, and nobody should mourn your life as anything, as you know, anything spectacular or special. Like, you lived as a joke, you died as a joke. You know, this would be like if, you know, if the Foo Fighters had a bunch of songs, I don't know, about dying of cancer, and then they died of cancer. It would be, you know, like if their entire seventh album was just about them dying of cancer, and then they died of cancer, it would be funny.
I was going to expect coincidental. I didn't know funny was going to be in that. Like, I thought it was more of like a self-attributing thing.
Well, I mean, even then, like, that's not even the same thing, because the Foo Fighters don't know if they're going to get cancer. Amy Winehouse knew that she was going to die of drugs. So I guess if the Foo Fighters' entire seventh album was just about dying of old age, and then they died of old age, it would be funny.
That would be pretty funny, actually. We saw this coming with their seventh studio release. It was old age that got them.
Well, one thing that I guess I want to add too is, like, what's with the 27 Club? Like, was she a hippie? Because don't you have to be a hippie to be in the 27 Club too?
Yeah, you pretty much have to be. I didn't know that British people could be hippies. I just thought they were douchebags. But yeah, it's just so silly. Are you offended that I made fun of British people?
Well, I mean, I'm not British, but a lot of things I like are British. So I just thought it'd be good to do a passing, hey, while you're moving on to your next subject. That's fair enough, I thought. Yeah. What were you saying?
Oh, I forget now. But, oh yeah, the 27 Club. Yeah, this is silly. Like, it used to be that you'd put, you know, very influential people in there. You know, like Jimi Hendrix, the greatest guitar player ever. Janis Joplin, obviously very, very big. Kurt Cobain changed music, you know, probably for at least the last 20 years or whatever, probably longer. And then just this chick, one hit wonders are apparently now in the 27 Club. It has more to do with just the day that you died than the fact that it's these legendary figures dying. It's ridiculous. Like, if Lou Bega died when he was 27, he'd be in there now.
Yeah, right. That's the thing I noticed missing from most of those was that I didn't see people saying, like, she's joined the 27 Club. What a genius. Like, those two phrases didn't appear next to each other. Either people were just talking how she was a talent who died too young, or that she merely died as a celebrity at the age of 27 or before the age of 27, which, you know, it's not exactly what you want to be known for when you're 27, but I didn't see anybody calling her a genius. It was more of like a general thing. Being a genius, a musical genius, had nothing to do with it anymore, is what I'm trying to say. It's just the mere fact that she was a musician and she died when 27. I didn't see anybody say, like, well, what about being a genius too? And they're just like plugging their ears or closing their eyes, I guess, if it's on the internet, and going, la, 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 la. Nothing about genius work here. Jeez, we didn't say that.
Yeah, like, so if somebody who was if somebody who was like actually talented and actually like had a career in music died at the age of 26, nobody would care. I'd just be like, oh, they're not part of the club. They're not nearly as talented as Amy Winehouse could be.
Right. Yeah. That's a sad state that that's become. It might be lowering the standards. It's a tragedy she died, but 27 club? That's very silly.
Yeah.
See, I almost wish that she would have got really fat and died when she was like 33, 34, so she would have joined, you know, Belushi and Farley.
Yeah, she would have a stint on Saturday Night Live as a guy who's funny because he's fat.
Well, fall down, but she's a crack whore, so she'd fall down anyway.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I think that there should be a new rule. I think I've said this before, where like if somebody, like if on your Facebook likes, the person who just died is not on your Facebook likes, you're not allowed to say that you're sad that they died. Because all these people are, oh, Amy Winehouse is so sad. None of these people have the album. None of these people care one bit. And, you know, it's just silly to me, this level of celebrity worship. Like, I think it's sort of different, and this might just be me justifying myself, but I think it's different if a guy like Ryan Dunn dies and people get bummed out, because he was in the number one comedy last year. Amy Winehouse, nobody's listened to her goddamn song in 6 years. And, I mean, she's nobody. I don't understand why all of a sudden people come out of the woodwork for people who have died that they don't care about just because you follow them on Twitter or something. I don't even think Amy Winehouse has Twitter. She's a junkie. She can't even use Twitter. So, very upsetting to me.
Just to follow that up, and I think it's shitty that, you know, Dunn died and everybody was, oh, sad, and then whenever the police or cops or sheriffs or whatever released like how he died or, you know, the actions that he was doing, then everybody flipped a bitch and was like, oh, fuck that guy, he deserved yeah. to die. Like, what the fuck is that? Like, and then you have Amy Winehouse OD and nobody's gonna flip a bitch because they know that she OD'd. It's like, ugh, I hate people.
I concur. The next thing that we have on the lightning round is this is a very, very happy thing for me. I love when we have politician scandals. And apparently a fellow named Representative Wu from Oregon is going to be resigning because he had sex with an 18-year-old. And the 18-year-old is alleging that it was not consensual. Wu, of course, is saying that it was consensual, and he's resigning. And I think that resigning is something you don't do if your assertion that the sex was consensual is true. So, how do you guys feel about this latest fun scandal?
I agree with you. I mean, I don't know. Like, if he didn't, you know, put it in or without consent, then you just don't resign. Because then what are you going to do for the rest of your life besides put it in or without consent, you know? it doesn't make sense to me. And then what are they saying that he doesn't want to step down until after he seals the debt crisis or whatever?
Yeah, like, he's waiting until that's solved.
Why?
I don't know.
Like, so he can get notoriety that he helped seal the debt? Oh, but by the way, I fucked an 18-year-old that may have not wanted it. You know, who cares? Just step down now, or don't step down at all.
Yeah, you know? Like, if your judgment is such that you think that raping 18-year-olds is okay, maybe you shouldn't be weighing in on the most important decision in economic, you know, recent history.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't need your voice in there. How do you feel about this, Frisbee?
I like what you just said. I didn't actually consider that. I mean, usually when it comes to these political scandals, I'm focusing on what it is that they're trying to do. But the fact that he's not going to step down until there's this debt crisis resolved, when in fact we probably don't need him. Like, I'm kind of scared of what his answer might be now. It's like, well, if we just force the debt to do something when it doesn't want it, clearly, that might be the best answer.
What we need is younger.
Like, here's my plan, guys. Let's just hold down the American people. They might say no at first. Trust me. That's horrible. I'm not saying that's what he's going to do, but yeah, that's probably what he's going to do.
Yeah. up next, a lesbian couple. We're at Dollywood, and one of them was wearing a shirt that says, "Marriage is so gay," and a person working there asked them to turn the shirt inside out as to not offend other people. It seems like every week we have a story about some gay people being, being forced to do something they don't want to do as to not offend people with their existence. How do you guys feel about this?
I'm wondering if it's the same the exact same lesbian couple we discussed last week. The names haven't been revealed, but the couple who got kicked out of a San Francisco art museum for holding hands, like, I think this might be part of a new pilgrimage they have to go around the country in different regions and just be asked to do something by security that's kind of off-putting or odd. And yeah, this definitely fits in line with it. Like, I don't care about Dollywood. I have no reason to go there. But yeah, this is just another, this is chalk number two for really odd choices from security. Turn your shirt inside out. It's very odd. It's almost like a middle school request.
Yeah, yeah. I remember having to turn my Marilyn Manson shirts inside out in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing, like, obviously, they, you know, it's not about the shirt. Like, if you're at Dollywood, I think that they're just upset that you're, like, openly gay, you know, and they don't want to offend people by, you know, you existing and stuff. And it's more about that than what the shirt says. But at the same time, like, if you go to Dollywood with a shirt that says marriage is so gay, like, that's the kind of, like, you want attention. Like, you know, when I was in high school, you know, my dad would be like, hey, come on, we're going to the family reunion in the park. And I'd be like, this is the perfect time to wear my Bad Religion shirt with the crossed out cross. This is great. Or my, you know, Public Enemy shirt that says something something offensive to people who I know I'm going to be seeing. And that's what this kind of thing is, you know. Like, you can either wear, you know, your shirt that's for your favorite band, or you can wear this shirt that you know will be offensive to all the rednecks at Dollywood. And, you know, I mean, so they knew that it was going to be an attention-grabbing thing. I mean, probably not to this, you know, extent or anything, but, you know, it's the kind of thing you wear for attention.
Yeah, I agree with you on that point. And just reading the news article, I mean, they just seem so happy that they're getting coverage to send off their little letter to the head honchos at Dollywood. I mean, but, you know, whatever. Cool. I mean, whatever. marriage is so gay. I mean, it really is. I got out. That's how gay it is. And, you know, whatever. Fuck them. I got nothing. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Dollywood. I mean, it's Dollywood.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say, really. Like, is Dollywood part of Pigeon Forge? It's the same thing, right? Except Dollywood's more of the theme parky aspect.
Yeah, yeah. I believe so.
Yeah. Who cares? Let people wear whatever they want. I think they would just be in need of attendance at this point.
Yeah, I think that it would be more offensive if they, you know, wore that to, like, Neverland Ranch or something, but...
Yeah, one of the quotes from one of the people who wore the shirt is, if marriage equality is going to happen, it's not going to happen if people sit at home quietly. So, you know, I don't know if you're really going to change legislation about gay marriage by wearing a shirt at Dollywood. Like, I don't know if the president's also at Dollywood on a ride and he's like, oh my God, did you see that shirt? We got to act fast. Marriage is gay. We gotta sign this shit tonight. Cancel my meetings. So, the next thing we have is that a woman has to go on trial because she put those fake plastic testicles on the back of her car. And
I like the way you describe it much better. I've heard them commonly referred to as truck nuts, but I just like how you give the long textbook definition, those plastic testicles on the back of her car.
Plastic testicles and scrotum.
Right.
She was hit with a $445 fine that accuses her of violating the state's obscene bumper sticker law, which is silly because testicles aren't a bumper sticker. This happened in South Carolina, and yeah, I find this silly. How do you guys feel about this? And are you now afraid to put fake testicles on your cars?
The thought never crossed my mind. I had no interest in putting fake genitalia anywhere on my car, ever. But yeah, it's extremely silly. On all points. Like, there's no reason to own a pair of fake testicles to hang from your car. And there's no reason to say that it violates, what was it? An offensive bumper sticker law?
Yeah. Obscene bumper sticker law.
Obscene. Bad taste, maybe. But obscene, definitely not. I would still charge the same for a fine if it violated bad taste, which it does. It might be an extra thing they want to count. But yeah, it's, they're dumb. They're not hurting anyone. I'm kind of surprised this happened in South Carolina, of all places.
Yeah, it seems like South Carolina would be the prime place to see testicles on a truck.
Right. That or, like, you know, anywhere in the deep south, really.
Yeah, I used to see these around Dayton a lot. I haven't seen them since moving to California, oddly enough.
I hadn't seen them in Dayton for a while before I moved, but I was always annoyed by them. I always thought these looked ridiculous. But, whatever.
Yeah, they're very weird, because, I mean, like, they, it's not like they're just two balls and they're supposed to sort of seem like testicles. Like, they look like testicles. Like, they're real wrinkly, you know, like, they look like real testicles. And I don't understand the point, like, of putting them on your truck. Like, I don't think anybody would put, like, a big plastic dong where the hood ornament goes or anything like this. But maybe your car would be cooler if you did. But I don't know. I've never really got the point of them other than to say, like, your truck is manly, I guess.
Or your truck is ready to have intercourse with other vehicles.
Go ahead. Having just come from Dayton, it's like you see them every day still, and if there's a law that they want to pass, I'm for it because I'm sick of seeing it. But it doesn't seem like it classifies in the obscene bumper sticker law. So, I mean, it's South Carolina. They don't know really what they're doing all too well these days. They're fucking red dirt.
That clay dirt.
Yeah, the clay dirt, like, oh, man. Walk into school through, like, mud, shit mud, clay dirt with, like, you get to school with, like, 4 inches of clay on the bottom of your sneakers, and you just would trail mud all day long because you're poor and you only have one pair of shoes. Yeah, my childhood was great.
Did you grow up in South Carolina?
I lived there for 3 years.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I lived in Greenville.
No, I live in Charlotte. In North Carolina right now. I just moved this past year.
I've seen Metallica in Charlotte. It's a nice place.
It's not bad.
When Metallica still mattered, you know, way back when.
Up next we have another piece of news that's both horrifying and hilarious. Apparently somebody in, where is this place? Virginia, is going around to grocery stores and stuff and finding women and then slashing their butts with a box cutter and then rolling out. So I don't know. How do you guys feel about this? Do you guys fear for your butt cheeks?
Well, I mean, I do have the ass of a lady, so I guess if I were in Virginia, I would fear for my sweet glutes, but I'm not there, so I guess I don't really have to worry. It's kind of fucked up, though. It's not kind of fucked up. It's really fucked up that he thought of it before me.
Yeah, he's apparently doing this at Forever 21 and at grocery stores, and the police say we don't have any information as to why this would be occurring, any type of motive. No kidding. I mean this is not something that, you know, you have books and books of criminal profiling evidence about. Like, this is probably the first guy to go around serial butt slashing people. But they have a picture of him, and he looks like a mild-mannered fellow. He doesn't look like the kind of creep you would assume to be butt-slashing.
Oh, so they did catch him, then.
No, they haven't caught him, but they have a photo of him. He's wearing, like, jean shorts and a polo shirt.
Carrying a box cutting knife.
Yeah, in his hand.
up to the camera, holding it up, yeah. Like a torch. Yeah, it's disturbing. I mean, obviously, like, if that's as far as it goes, at least for the most part, these people are okay, aside from what's happened to their butts, but it's still very odd and horrifying.
Yeah.
Like, why butts? Why do that?
Well, see, I understand why you would do it at Forever 21. Like, have you ever been in a Forever 21?
Yeah, maybe he just
but
went there to
a grocery store. Yeah.
Yeah. He was just hanging out in Forever 21 trying to shop for things for his girlfriend, and then got so upset at all the crappy music and all the lame ladies everywhere that he just started to have, you know, he just had to slash some butts. The real sad part about this, I think, is that these ladies who got their butts slashed, they're never going to be able to wear thong underwear again. That's the real tragedy here. because of the scars, you see.
I'll
cut that joke out. That's fine.
I was agreeing with you. I forget that on the radio you don't see nods.
Hold on to your butts.
And so that brings us to the end of the show, the saddest part of the show. I would like to thank Jeremy for coming on the show. Thanks a lot.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks for being on.
You can find Jeremy on the Twitter at Just Fucking Jeremy.
That's just fucking me.
And what's the Twitter for your soon-to-be podcast?
It's Acid Pop Cult. And I'll send you guys the links whenever it's all up and ready.
And you can follow Jason Frisbee on Twitter, even though I don't think he's been tweeting a lot lately, which saddens me.
I tried. I really did.
Yeah, he's at Jason Frisbee. Follow me at Parker Arizona. Go to our website, poolpartyradio.com. We've got all the episodes, and you can leave us comments on our blog, and we will love you. But most importantly, go to iTunes. We've got a link to iTunes, our iTunes, on our website, or you can just search for Pool Party Radio and give us some comments, nice comments and nice reviews, because that really helps us a lot, gets other people to like the show, or just tell somebody you know. If it's their birthday, be like, hey, my birthday present to you is Pool Party Radio. That will also help us a great deal. If you have anything to add to anything we've said, email us at poolpartyradio@gmail.com. And be our friend on Facebook. Facebook.com/poolpartyradio. Is there anything else we need to plug, Mr. Frisbee?
I think that's it.
Cool. Well, then, I'm Parker for Jason and Jeremy saying mahalo.
Stacks on deck, Patron on ice, we can pop bottles all night, baby, you can have whatever you like, yeah, you can have whatever you like, yeah, late night sex, so it's so tight, gas up the jet for you tonight, baby, you can go wherever you like, yeah, you can go wherever you like.
even signed off like Evan Krill. I didn't expect that. That's good, though.
Like, that's how the show's going to do from now on. I don't know how to begin or end the show, so I'm just going to steal from anybody out there.
No, that's stealing's great. Are you kidding? That's the best way to do anything.